Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. I'm Phil Kitramalides, joined by a heroic Sid Lowe, who has been ill all weekend, but in true British resilient fashion, he's here, he's keeping calm, he's carrying on, in stark contrast to my Hellenic hypochondria. If I had been as ill as you've been this weekend, Sid, there's no way I was doing the podcast, but here you are to speak to us about Spanish football. Hello, Sid.
Hello. It does mean that I've had to do a little bit of catching up this afternoon because I didn't manage to see anything yesterday except the second half of the Barcelona game. And also I did see the whole of Sevilla Atletico against Belef of Malaga. But then might have had to dash off a couple of times to remove the contents of my stomach fairly violently, and then
you saw the saw the bottom of the toilet bowl for a lot of the day yesterday. So yeah,
I saw the bottom of toilet bowls, of bushes, corners of stadiums, yes. That sort of stuff. Yeah.
So Sid's been sick a lot, guys, but he's still here. He's still willing to pod. So that just underlines his monumental commitment to Spanish football and to this podcast. Well done, Sydney. You're a hero. And you're going to Vallecas tonight. You absolute loony. What are you doing?
Yeah, well, I just thought, you know, Rayo against Celta should actually be quite a lot of fun. It's a chance to see Barry. Celta under massive pressure at the moment, so that's really quite an interesting one in its own right. and I managed to keep down some toast this morning. And then I had a little bit of caldo not long ago. And I'm starting to think that I might be able to make this now.
So straight to Vallecas. You haven't been sick for a couple of hours, so straight to the Estadio de Vallecas. We'll see whether or not Sid makes it to the final game of match day 16. Here are the previous nine games in this round of fixtures. Friday night was the footballistic bloodbath that we expected it to be. Getafe against Valencia. It's become a real grudge match between these two sides. Three red cards, lots of fouls, and just one goal was scored by Getafe late on, and they beat Valencia by 1-0. Then on Saturday, Las Palmas beat Alaves by 1-0 to continue their really impressive run of form. Real Betis and Real Madrid drew 1-1 at the Estadio Benito Villamarín in a really entertaining game, which Sydney was pitch side for. La Real beat Villarreal by 3-0. Excellent performance from the Basques. And Mallorca beat Sevilla by 1-0, Sevilla still haven't won a league game under Diego Alonso. The Uruguayan's been in charge for 10 matches across the league and the Champions League. They've won 0. Then on Sunday, Atletico Madrid raced into a 2-0 lead at home to bottom of the table Almeria after 25 minutes. We thought it might be a 6, 7 or 8-0 victory for Atleti, but they had to make do with a 2-1 victory. Almeria scoring in the second half, but Atleti picking up all 3 points, and afterwards Stefan Savic admitting they were a little bit tired. Granada against Athletic Club was suspended. We'll talk about why in just a moment. Cadiz and Osasuna finished 1-1. And then the big game of the weekend was at Montjuic, where Girona beat Barcelona 4-2. First time they've ever beaten Barcelona away. And they are 2 points clear at the top of the table after 16 matches. We've spoken a lot about Girona on the podcast. We will continue to speak a lot about Girona on the podcast. And that's where we'll start this week's podcast, by discussing their really quite excellent performance against Barcelona. I tweeted, Sid, I was watching this live. I think you've had to watch it back because, last night.
I watched the second half live, but and I've had to rewatch the first,
First half, I tweeted after the last 20 minutes of the first half was some of the best football, was the best football I think I've seen any team play in La Liga this whole season. They were absolutely sensational, Girona, in terms of everything. Genuinely, everything they did looked sensational. A team that knew exactly how they wanted to play, exactly where everybody needed to be. They were finding spaces against Barcelona. They were pushing Barcelona back onto the back foot. They were creating numerical superiority. For times in this game, it was a genuine joy to watch this team. I don't think I'm exaggerating. And they're the top scorers in the division. They're top of the division. They've won more matches than anyone else in the division. They're 2 points clear. And they're the best team in Spain at the moment, Sid. They genuinely are. And yesterday they showed us that.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the point, isn't it? That it's one thing being top and having the results. And obviously the results are absolutely fantastic. They've only been beaten once, and that was against Real Madrid. They've picked up an amount of points that no team other than Madrid, Barca or Atletico have ever had at this stage of the season. You know, it's not even teams that have then collapsed. No team outside of the top three has ever been this good this late into the season. But it's also the way they're playing. And I thought one of the things that was interesting yesterday, and actually it was particularly interesting listening to them talk about it post-game. And when you get that kind of post-game discussion, but not just discussion, I would call it analysis, that reinforces what you've seen, it's really, really useful. And Michel talked about it, and they had Eric Garcia and Alex Garcia talking post-game, who both talked about it as well. They talked about how Michel had said to them pre-game, you have spent the whole season being used to dominating matches. You have to know that there will be spells in this game when you won't. This is a team that won't allow you to dominate possession, to have the ball all the time. And you have to, A, have the capacity to withstand that at times. B, have the personality to then get the ball and make them chase you when you have it. No, not just to get it and try too hard or to be too direct or to try and make something happen straight away, but to make them chase you. But also to have that incision. And he talked a lot, Michel, post-game, about the importance of... either the ability to counter-attack, but also in particularly talked about the importance of Dovic in terms of holding the ball, allowing others to play, and in a kind of a quick exchange, breaking through a team like Barcelona. I think you see that really clearly on the first goal. I think they've been very conscious of isolating the two fullback positions, in particular the right, although actually the goal itself comes on Girona's right rather than on Girona's left, but the Barcelona right. But they did it to both sides. That willingness to, in a couple of passes, cut through. They get the goal at a time when Barcelona are actually making it quite difficult for them. And then, as you say, it felt very much, didn't it, like this was a game that was where Girona wanted it to be. And that Girona were really comfortable, but maybe not comfortable, because that would suggest that this wasn't hugely intense, which I think it was, that it wasn't difficult, that it wasn't a battle. All those things I think are true. But it felt like Girona knew exactly what they were doing. And I think they're a deeply impressive football team. They're not a team that's overachieving in terms of results. They're not a team that's playing really well now, but you look at them and think, this won't last. They are a team who are top of the table, and you look at them and you think, they are top of the table because they are the best. They are top of the table because they're going to be there all season. Now, they may not be. Of course, they may not be. And I think it's quite difficult for us to bring ourselves to truly believe that they will be, because they're not the name. But if we analyse the teams in La Liga right now and forgot what the history is, didn't look at the value of the squad, didn't look individually at the players, and just said, who is the best team in Spain? It is Girona. And it is Girona quite comfortably, I think, as well.
I completely agree. And football, it's a sort of visceral, emotional game. And I was just watching this last night, and some of the play from Girona, I was whooping with excitement and joy watching them. I thought, wow, this is amazing. They could have scored 8 or 9 goals yesterday. They created so many chances. They played with zero fear, Sid. There was no fear about this. And Michel talked about going to another level, the next level. If they won at Montjuic, they'd go on to the next level. And they're there now. They're in this next level now. They've beaten Barcelona away. They're leaders after 16 games. And I don't think we're getting carried away to say that they're going to be in this title race. They're 12 points clear of fifth. So they're not far off having already secured Champions League football. I mean, they're mathematically, they're not there yet, but they're not far off. And now they've just got to look forward, keep going game by game. They don't have European football. I mean, it's not ridiculous to think that they can keep this up.
No, it's not. It absolutely isn't, as you say. I mean, firstly, because of all the analysis, you know, that we've done about how they play. Secondly, because of the results. But thirdly, I think that point you make is an important one. They don't have maybe the squad, the depth that a Barca or Atletico or Real Madrid have. But two big caveats to that. Number one is actually when they've made changes, their changes have always performed. And so then you start thinking to yourself, maybe actually they do have the depth. Maybe it's just because these aren't names. Exactly. Maybe these aren't names that we're talking about, we don't allow ourselves to see that there is a depth there. And I think as well, one of the other things is that when you've got a very clear idea and everyone is, and this is a bit cliched, but allow me to say it anyway, everyone is working in the same direction, so to speak, then I think actually it can disguise the potential weaknesses in a squad. It makes it easier for those squad players who come in and perform. Look at the goal scoring. And this is just one very simple and maybe overly simple example, but I think it helps to illustrate the point that we're making here. And their second top scorer is Stuani, who's not a starter. Hmm. Very rarely starts. And yet he comes on, he contributes every time. You look, for example, at Jan Kota, who was brilliant in this game, was brilliant last week. He provided the two goals for Stuani, albeit one of them wasn't officially Stuani's goal. But he came on with last week with 25 minutes to go and completely changed the game and hadn't started. And so you're seeing, and this weekend, for example, they didn't have Yangel Herrera playing. Yes. Ivan Martin played the middle of midfield. And again, the performance from Ivan Martin was brilliant. And so you look at this and you think, well, they don't, on the face of it, have the strength and depth, but maybe they do, and maybe the clarity of idea means that it doesn't matter. And the other element is that one you've mentioned, which adds this strength and depth. Maybe they don't have the strength and depth of these other teams, but nor do they have the obligations. No Champions League football, no European football. Yes, they'll keep playing in the Copa del Rey, but I don't actually think that's the drain on teams that it sometimes looks like. I almost wonder if they might actually be looking at the Copa del Rey and, unlike some of the teams that would find themselves in this position, think, you know what, we can try and win this because we're good enough. Mm. And as I say, I don't think, what is it? It would be three more games before the final, wouldn't it, to get them to final? I don't think that's a big issue. I think they can be in there to the end. Do I think there's a couple of reasons why they might not? Yeah, I'm sure there might be a handful. I mean, one of them is, if we look, and this brings us back to what you were saying, by the way, about what Mitchell had said about we're in a different place if we beat Barcelona. His phrase was really nice when he says it puts us in another dimension, was his phrase. And I suppose you can look at that and say, well, when they were beaten by Real Madrid earlier in the season, I think we all allowed ourselves to believe, and not unjustifiably, by the way, but okay, this is a sign that, all right, it's all well and good doing this, but they haven't really done it against big clubs. At that stage, I think, I was looking at the stats earlier, so I won't be very far wrong, even if I'm slightly wrong. I think they'd only played one team in the top 11 at that time, and that had been Real Sociedad, and they hadn't beaten Real Sociedad, they'd drawn to them. They then played Real Madrid and lost, and you think, well, they're not really playing anyone very good. But then actually, since then, of course, they've now beaten Barcelona, and that changes it. But it is also true that they played Athletic and didn't beat them, and they haven't yet played Betis or Atletico. In other words, of their wins this season, only one is against a team in the top seven. So you could say, maybe they don't quite have that step, but beating Barcelona and putting four past them, not just beating Barcelona, putting four past them and playing the way they played, makes you think, when they play Atletico, when they play Betis, which I believe are the next two games, or at least two of the next three, and they must be, obviously, because we're very nearly at the halfway stage of the season now. Those are games you look at now and you think, I don't think there is any guarantee. Well, there's certainly no guarantee. I don't even think I would say they're not favourites in those two games. I think they quite possibly are. They are a really, really good football team.
Next game for them is at home to Alaves, and then on the 21st of December, they're away to Betis, and the 3rd of January, they are at home to Atletico Madrid. So
it's the last two games of the first half of the season then,
Let's talk about Barca and how they played in this game, because they had chances. They had a lot of shots on goal as well, which Xavi was very quick to point out. He also said
31, that, he said, didn't he? He was very quick to make sure we knew that.
He said they're a team in construction, Sid, which is a comment that's been getting quite a lot of criticism today. Understandably so?
Yes, I think so. I would say actually both positions are understandable. I can understand why Xavi is talking about a team in construction. I can, because there's a couple of new signers this summer, because, of course, we know the financial limitations. We know they haven't actually bought the players they want. But hang on. I can understand him saying that, which isn't to say I agree with him. I can understand him saying that.
Okay.
I think you look at this and you think, but you bought lots of players last year and you spent quite a lot of money on some of them. Robert Lewandowski wasn't cheap. Ferran, who came a bit earlier, wasn't cheap. Jules Koundé certainly wasn't cheap. And while you got João Félix on loan, it's still João Félix. While you got Inigo Martinez for free, it's still Inigo Martinez. While you got Gundogan for free, it's still Ilkay Gundogan. These aren't poor players. And you look at Barcelona's first choice 11, assuming everyone is fit. And I think it's very difficult to see a really obvious flaw in that 11 in terms of names. And this is maybe the counterbalance to Girona. We're saying Girona might not have the names, but look at what a good team they are. And then we come to the next point. If Barcelona are a team in construction, what are Girona?
Well, that was the point I was going to make, given the monumental overhaul that they had this summer.
Yeah.
If anyone's in
construction. They lost their top scorer. They lost their best central defender. They lost Riquelme, who was playing on the wing for them. They lost their midfield linchpin, who went to Barcelona, by the way, for 3.5 million. Because, of course, to be fair to Oriol Romeu, although Girona weren't very pleased, and there's that nice quote from Pere Guardiola, who, of course, is one of the part owners of Girona, and when Barcelona started chasing him, he said, they're really not doing any favours here. Maybe they were, as it turns out, because that midfield has been restructured, and I think Alex Garcia has taken on far more responsibility. You know, he's a player who's been involved in more actions than anyone else in La Liga this season, I think.
Yeah, I told you that a couple of weeks ago. Yeah.
Did you? Oh, well, I looked at the stat today, and he still is, by the way.
Yeah.
Because I was looking at the stat today.
He just does everything.
Yeah, he does a bit of absolutely everything. And they are, you know, so you say that these pieces were taken off them, and yet their team is functioning. So as I say, I sort of understand it from Xavi, but the weird thing about Xavi's team is. And I've just said that I think if you look at the 11 in terms of names, with the absence of Gavi at the moment, and I must admit, I'm not sure how you would rejig the team if Gavi was back in it. I don't think there's a player in there you go, yeah, I would absolutely get rid of him. The funny thing is, the weakest link for me at the moment feels like it's the most expensive of all of them. Maybe not the most expensive. No, not the most expensive, in fact, because Frankie was more and Jules Koundé was more. But the biggest name of all of them, for me, is the biggest problem at the moment. That's Robert Lewandowski.
Lewandowski, yes. Yeah. Certainly feels that way. He missed a really good chance, by the way, in injury time to make it 3-3. I mean,
go back to last week, Phil. He had a massive chance last week and it hit him in the face. He has a massive chance this week and it hits him on the shoulder. Now, I don't know about you, but I'd be asking him to check his contact lenses are still the right prescription, because that's two in a row that he's misjudged and have hit other parts of his body. Now, I'm being facetious up to a point, but it says something about something being not quite right.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Listen, we're going to move on because there's lots of stuff we want to talk about. But if you guys want to ask us a question about something we didn't mention, why not become a patron and get involved in the Q&A pod that we do every Tuesday? Or, alternatively, you could give the gift of TSFP to someone you love this Christmas. Ideally, someone who loves Spanish football. You can sign them up for an annual membership and get 10% off. They'll get a Q&A pod and a bonus pod every single week, plus our series TSFP Presents and Rincón Cultural. You get Al's occasional paper reviews and access to the TSFP Discord. Head to patreon.com/TSFP for more details. I love how Al's had a second baby and it's become an occasional paper review rather than a daily paper review. But It is what it is, amigos. We are but three men trying to do our best here, providing you with content on Spanish football. And I think we're doing all right. So come and join us. Patreon.com/TSFP. We're going to move on and talk about Betis 1, Real Madrid 1, which was a really entertaining game from a neutral perspective. I watched it. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good game of football. You were there. You were pitch side, Sid. What was your impressions of the game?
Yeah, my impression was similar to yours. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really good, high level, good quality of football. That said, I think a pitch side possibly it slightly exaggerates that, and certainly talking to our guys in the studio, I think they didn't enjoy it quite as much as I had. Certainly not in the first half. But I thought the quality was good. I think it's lovely watching Isco play. I thought Ayossi was excellent again. I thought Modric was very, very good. And it was a fun game with two really brilliant goals. You know, the way that Bellingham finishes his is the finish of a man who says, this football lark's quite easy, isn't it? I mean, it's very, very calm, very smoothly done. Then Rubal scores an absolutely belting goal from almost, you know, miles out from an almost impossible position or a seemingly almost impossible position. And Betis then really took the game to Real Madrid. Real Madrid actually lost control a little bit after Modric went off. He wasn't very happy going off. He threw the bottle of water down and then kicked it across the technical area. Well, not the technical area, the area in front of the bench. And Madrid did lose control. And actually, Betis really could and possibly should have won it. Isco hits the post in the last minute. And then in the 89th minute. And then in the very last minute, I can't remember who it was from, actually. Was it William Jose when Lunin makes a brilliant save as well, right near the very, very end? And it was just a really good game. Mm. And afterwards, Ancelotti said, a point here is a good result. But yeah. I think Real Madrid players knew that 1-0 would have been really big for them to have won 1-0 at Betis.
Yeah. He basically said, Ancelotti, afterwards, you know, 1-1 is a decent result here. It was a good game. They played well as well. They could have won it. We played decent as well in time. So, yeah, 1-1, a pretty fair result. You mentioned Lunin, who started this game, which is not what Ancelotti said was going to happen a couple of weeks ago. He said Lunin will play the next game and then Kepa will be back for the Betis match. And it wasn't the case because I think there was such a backlash from the media and fans and everyone suggesting that it was deeply unfair for Lunin to just automatically lose his place, given that Kepa was back fit and Lunin's been playing well and he's earned the right to start for Real Madrid, I think.
Yeah, and that's what Ancelotti said, wasn't it? And I think you're right. I think a little bit of the noise probably played a part, but he said before the Betis game, he said, I know I said that when Kepa comes back, he goes into the team, but Lunin has, I think the phrase was, has earned the right to be considered. Now, at that point, I wasn't sure he was going to play him. And I thought maybe there's, you know, his get-out clause is that he's got a Champions League game coming up this week, which doesn't really matter. So Lunin can have that. And then, there'll be a cup game, what will be the first week that we get back, and he'll have that game as well. And then I can sort of say he's been getting a chance. But actually, I think it was the right decision. I think Lunin had done everything that you could expect him to. I think there were, I think there were doubts about Lunin. I think that's just borne out by the fact that they immediately signed a player as soon as Courtois got injured. If they'd really trusted Lunin, they wouldn't have done that. But now Lunin, given a little bit of continuity, has played very well, despite the fact I actually thought he played pretty well in the first couple of league games as well, and immediately lost his place to Kepa for the, I think it was the Celta game, wasn't it? Week three, maybe. Week three, I think. And I think he deserves it. And as I say, he made a really, really good save right at the end. Another one that he tipped over the bar, which wasn't quite as difficult just after that. But all in all, and I think there's a confidence about him now that possibly wasn't there before. And I think that's maybe the most important element to this. It's not just the saves, it's the fact that the defenders feel comfortable around him now. And I think that's really important.
Certainly is. Real Madrid playing in midweek tomorrow against Union Berlin in the Champions League in a game that doesn't really mean too much. So we'll probably see Kepa come back into that game. But let's see. 16 goals in 18 games for Jude Bellingham now. It wasn't actually overall his probably best performance, but still a really terrific goal from Jude. A slightly different goal as well to what we've seen him being scored. And just another one to add to the repertoire, because he can score all different types of goals. And this one was an absolute beauty. Go and see it. If you haven't seen Aitor Rubial's goal for Betis as well, go and see that, because it's an absolute screamer. Betis on a long, long unbeaten run. And like we said, this is probably a good result for both teams. Not too bad. Let's move on and talk about the other side from the city of Seville, because Sevilla are in trouble. Yeah. Again, we're almost in exactly the same position as we were last season. They lost 1-0 to Mallorca this weekend, a game which they dominate in terms of possession, but they had a goal ruled out for a slightly questionable VAR decision. It was the VAR judged that En-Nesyri had handled the ball in the goal that he scored, and it was ruled out. So the luck not going Sevilla's way, and Diego Alonso absolutely furious afterwards, as a lot of people were. But the facts are that he still hasn't won a league game, and it's been 7 league matches and 3 Champions League games, and he's not won any of those 10 games. Yes, there have been lots of players out injured, and they were missing for this game. Jesus Navas, Fernando Acuña, Nianzou, Mariano, Bade, Lamela, Suso, Nyland. There were a lot of players out missing, almost an entire first 11. But nevertheless, it was a team that could have played better than it did. I've been writing about this this today, Sid. So I've done a bit of research, and here are the actual statistics. So the parallels with last season are really quite extraordinary.
Right.
Here we go. Sevilla appointed Jorge Sampaoli to replace a Europa League winning coach on the 6th of October 2022. They appointed Diego Alonso to replace a Europa League winning coach on the 10th of October 2023. They took 6 points from a possible 21 in the first 7 games under Sampaoli. They've taken 5 points from a possible 21 in the first 7 games under Alonso. After match day 16 last season, they were 17th with 15 points. After match day 16 this season, they're 16th with 13 points, so they do have a game in hand. There are lots and lots of comparisons that we could make with last season, but it seems almost exactly the same season once again, Sid. It's really quite extraordinary. And I framed my piece on the 1990s film, which I'm sure you've seen many, many times, Groundhog Day.
Yeah,
it does really feel like, it feels like Groundhog Day again. You know, Bill Murray's somewhere in South Spain going round and round and trying to get it right, and he's not at the moment.
Or is it the Cherry Street Bed and Breakfast, isn't it? Is it the Cherry Street Bed and Breakfast? I think it might be.
yes.
Yeah, I mean, do you know what?
I don't know who's Andy McDowell in this situation.
Do you know what this tells us? You see, I was quite down on Sevilla, but when you started drawing these parallels, I'm now very optimistic. It means they're going to win the Europa League again.
I don't think they're going to get into the Europa League, man.
Oh, that's the thing. They might not even get into it. Yeah, exactly. They might not even get into it. They're going to Lons, by the way, without any fans. If you've seen this, the French government has blocked the fans from travelling. There won't be any fans allowed in to the ground. Which
no,
I must admit, because of fan trouble, and I'm not exactly sure if there's a specific reason why the French government are doing it, if it's about Sevilla or if it's about their own issues. But it seems to me to be deeply, deeply out of order, that kind of thing, to be perfectly honest with you. But there you go. Especially the fans have already bought tickets and travel and all the rest of it. But I mean, in terms of Sevilla, this was a game, I think, in fairness, where you could say it's quite difficult to understand that they didn't win this. Where, as you've already pointed out, En-Nesyri was very unhappy for that goal to have been ruled out for hitting him on the elbow as the ball's going in. He also had a penalty that he thought he should have had. And actually, I think with hindsight, you think, well, maybe if you dived, you might have got it, which is a terrible position to be in because you don't want to be encouraging anyone to dive. Now, for what it's worth, I think it's two players holding on to each other trying to gain a position. But, of course, the defender has more of a vested interest in that holding on than the attacker does. And I can understand why En-Nesyri is annoyed, because partly he's probably thinking, well, you know, if I'm honest enough to not go down, that shouldn't punish me. I shouldn't be punished for the fact that I wasn't trying to make a meal of it. And then the goal that is ruled out, I actually think it's rightly ruled out, given the rules. And I think I think you can just about see that it hits his elbow, but I think it's desperately, desperately, desperately unlucky. And without VAR, it would never have been given. And without VAR not being given, no one would have ever said anything either. No one would have got correctly upset about him.
It just feels like, why? Well, I don't want to take it down this route, but why is VAR getting involved in this absolutely sort of fractional decision that, you know, could go either?
I guess in defence of them, because there is an image which demonstrates it hits the arm, and therefore it's not a subjective decision. It's, did it hit the arm? Yes, it's therefore not a goal, because a goal scored with a handball involved in it has to be ruled out, regardless of intentionality and all the rest of it. And so I suppose the argument for why does VAR get involved? Well, because it can show that it hit the elbow. I say that it can show it hit the elbow, by the way.
Well,
there's a few angles where I'm not entirely sure if it does, but there is one where I think you see the shirt on his elbow move as the ball's going past. I think you see the fabric on his elbow move. But, I mean, it is... I could... You know, if you're Sevilla, you're pissed off about it, put it that way.
Massively, massively pissed off. And do you know who their next league game is against, Sydney?
I'm guessing it's someone big. There's a reason why you're saying
this. It's not necessarily someone big. It's someone you absolutely do not want to play when you need to get points.
Is it Getafe?
It certainly is. It is Getafe this weekend. So, yeah, let's see if Diego Alonso is still there, by the way. Because if we're following what happened last season, the third manager should be on his way pretty soon.
Oh, yeah, that's the next bit of statistics, the parallel. How many weeks until the next manager comes, according to your parallels?
Hold on, let me tell you. It is... Not. We don't have too far to wait. It is March. Actually, we've got March.
Oh, okay. It's longer than that. I'm not sure he makes it to March. Are you? I don't think he makes it to March.
I'm not sure he makes it to March. I'm not sure he makes it to this weekend. But let's see. So I said that we'd mention why Granada and Athletic Club was suspended. It was suspended yesterday, and it's going to finish today. First 17 minutes were played yesterday, and Athletic went 1-0 up, but it was suspended due to a fan being taken very gravely ill in the stands, a home fan, a Granada fan, who subsequently died. So the game was obviously suspended, and it will resume tonight at 9 p.m. and we'll get the resuming 73 minutes or so between Granada and Athletic. But just a desperately sad situation. No one should go to a football match and never come back, but that's what happened to the Granada fan yesterday, so definitely in our thoughts, and just a really sad situation. So
yeah, I mean, there's not really very much to add to that. I'm not sure there'll be some investigation now into how quick the response could be and whether there was anything that could have been done better. But I think the starting point is simply that, isn't it? That to try and do the right thing by the fan and to be sorry for his passing. A 64-year-old who'd been a season ticket holder at Granada for 18 years, was at the game on his own, kept on going despite the fact he's been very ill of late. And it's just a really sad thing to have happened.
It is, of course. Before we go, we should tell you what happened in the Segunda. Leganés' lead at the top is down to just 2 points after they drew 1-1 with Eldense. Sergio Ortuño scored one of the goals of the season for Eldense. If you haven't seen it, my word, it is absolutely superb. So go and check that out. Valladolid are second. They beat Amorebieta 2-1. Sporting a third. A point further back, they drew 0-0 with Levante. Then it's Espanyol in fourth. They drew 1-1 with Zaragoza. And Oviedo are 11th after their 2-2 draw at Racing Santander. This week, we've got European action. Tuesday night is Lens against Sevilla, Union Berlin against Real Madrid, and Inter against Real Sociedad. Then on Wednesday, Atleti against Lazio, Royal Antwerp against Barca. And on Thursday, we've got Betis against Rangers and Rennes against Villarreal. That's it for this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. Thanks very much for joining us, amigos. If you'd like to continue to hear us speak throughout the week, come and join us at patreon.com/TSFP. And as we said, if you know someone who likes Spanish football, it is the festive season. It is a time when society pressures you into buying people things that they do not need. Well, they might not need a subscription to our podcast. But
of course
they might
you need
like
it. Yeah, of course they need it. They absolutely need it.
Patreon.com/TSFB. But if you think, oh no, forget all that, I want the free version. But we're going to be here every Monday. From now until the end of time, Sydney, we'll be doing this podcast. So come and join us each and every week, amigos. And we'll speak soon. Adios.
Cheerio.